Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited about the show we have to bring you today, as well as the guests. It's like a family reunion of sorts. Joining us once again, we have the playwright Andy Boyd, and joining us for the first time, we have the actor Jeff Gonzalez. Both through here to talk to us about their new show, Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist. It's playing right now through March 17th at The Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting thetanknyc.org. It is always wonderful to be featuring another play by this incredible playwright, so we're honored to have him back, and we can't wait to get to know our new guests even more. So let's go ahead and welcome on our guests. Andy, Jeff, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Good to be here.
Very happy to be here. Thank you.
Very excited to have the two of you here and to be learning more about this wonderful show, Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist. Andy, I feel like every time you join us, you've got some great new work that you've been stewing over
shucks.
You're like, and here it is. Here's another one. Why don't we start with you and have you tell us a little bit about what this play is about?
Yeah, sure. So this play, Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist, is pretty much what it says on the tin. Three long scenes, each one about a half an hour, that take place at three pivotal moments in the life of a fictional intellectual named Lev Trachtenberg, who we first meet as a kind of young student radical at City College in the 1930s. And then we see him as a sort of, you know, complacent, but still thinking of himself as a radical professor at Columbia in the 1960s, as he's sort of trying to figure out his relationship to the new student radicalism that sort of plays by different rules than they did in his days. And he tries to kind of figure out what to make of that. And then we see him in the third scene as the editor of a conservative magazine, kind of going, having gone sort of a full 180 in his political orientation. And he has a conversation with an old friend who we first saw in scene one that is sort of trying to sum up his life and legacy and trying to explain himself to somebody who still holds to his left-wing politics from his youth and trying to figure out, you know, why did one of them go in this one direction and one of them went in a completely opposite direction. It's inspired by a lot of real life radicals who made a similar turn throughout the course of the 20th century, including people like Irving Kristol, Eugene Genovese, more recently Christopher Hitchens, maybe a reference that your audience will understand better, David Mamet, you know, who started his career as a left-wing playwright, as a socialist playwright, who wrote with a picture of Eugene Debs above his desk. And now he says that Trump is one of the best presidents of his lifetime. So, you know, it's kind of a question asking, like, what is it about, it's a play asking the question of, what is it about our society that exerts this powerful rightward kind of gravitational force on a certain type of, you know, usually white man, but not exclusively white man, but a certain type of intellectual in America?
Oh, that's fascinating. I love it. So, Andy, where did you come up with the idea for this work?
It's been an idea that's been bopping around in my head for a long time. I took a class in college where we read a lot of these figures. And, you know, it's I saw a lot of myself in the younger versions of them. And they were writing stuff that I thought was, like, very interesting. And particularly the group around Partisan Review was this very interesting group of intellectuals who, like, really believed in, you know, social transformation, believed in revolution, believed that, you know, we could create a country where nobody was homeless and nobody was hungry and everybody had medical care and nobody had to, you know, obey the arbitrary dictates of a boss at work, but we would, you know, run our entire society democratically. But they also believed in modernist literature and abstract expressionist art and sort of like avant-garde culture. And that was a mix that I found very interesting as a college student because, you know, I like a lot of sort of like traditional agitprop art. I love San Francisco Mime Troupe and, you know, Bread and Puppet and that kind of stuff. But that's not my favorite type of art necessarily. I mean, I love, you know, Tennessee Williams and I love, you know, James Joyce and I love these artists who are much more interested in, you know, the individual and the depths of exploring a particular character than the wider social fabric. So this was an exciting group of people because they kind of balanced both of those two concerns that I felt very strongly. But then I started to wonder if there was maybe something wrong with this combination when I realized that like a huge number of them later went on to like not only abandon the radicalism, but become, real fire-breathing conservatives. Like some of the people who, kind of set the agenda for the Reagan administration had formerly been on the radical left. And so I kind of just started to think like, well, why is that? What's going on here? And then I wrote the play when I was in the Speaker's Corner writers group from Gingold Theatrical Group. And we were kind of encouraged to write plays that were inspired by or in conversation with the work of George Bernard Shaw. And Shaw was a socialist playwright, and he's very interested in the connections between people's ideologies and their personal lives, and the way that their kind of personal life can challenge their ideology and can mold their ideology, and the ways that, the line between the personal and the political is always pretty hazy. And so I wrote the first draft of the play then, and been trying to get it produced ever since. That was 2019, 2020. So not a great time to write a new play. So it's taken a little while, but I think it's gotten, I haven't changed a whole lot. It's probably, 75% the same as it was then, but I think that 25% is really important. So actually, I think it was a blessing in disguise that we didn't get into production right as I was done with the first draft.
That is fascinating. That is absolutely wonderful. Love that. Jeff, I want to bring you in the conversation. As you had mentioned previously, you're one of five actors in this show. I would love to know, how did you come upon this piece?
Well, honestly, as with so many other things, as an actor, I mean, just chance. I mean, I think it was Andy, was it 2020 or 2021?
2020.
It was okay. It was 2020. It was during the pandemic, and there was a showcase of scenes from different plays that we were a part of with the Gingold Group. I don't
Yes,
remember exactly what it all. I mean, you said it. It's
yeah. Instead of we didn't do readings of the full play. We
right.
did like a sort of, cabaret of one scene from each of the plays.
And I was invited to be a part of it. And my friend Melissa Crespo, she directed the reading, and she brought me onto it. And just reading it, so initially all I got was just that one scene, and it was the first like 8 minutes of the play that we read. And so that's the only context I had for it, but it was already just with that little sliver that I had, it was so interesting and so delicious. And the way that these people talked, and the way that they, the young passion, I mean, I recognize the young passion that they had in themselves, maybe not politically, but certainly for, whatever they believe, whether it was, artistic ambitions that I have had in my life, and the way that you just feed off of each other, and the way that you feed, and you also, like, I recognized in myself, not always proud to admit, but like just that need to show somebody, hey, look how much I know. Look how much, and not always, not in a bad way, but it is just like, and not even in a conscious way, but just it like, well, I guess the simple way of saying it is, Lev is definitely somebody who loves to, if not hear himself talk, he loves to talk. He just loves doing it, just for its own sake. And then later on, Andy invited me to do a reading of the play over Zoom of the entire play, and then reading the entire play in its stage back then. And I think that was 2021 or late 2020. I don't remember, but we all read that. We came together on Zoom and read that. And it was really a lot of fun to do that and do that exploration.
So wonderful. I love that. I love the way the two of you have come together, and I love that this is the journey the show's taken. And Jeff, I want to ask you, what has it been like developing this piece and getting it on its feet?
I don't know how else to say it. A lot of homework. A lot of homework. Well, it's Andy's written a play that I've said this to so many people because there's no other way to say it. He's written a play that he gets the dialogue. I read it and I'm like, oh, I can't wait. I'm going to sound smart. People are going to think I'm smart. I love it. It is just it. And but the caveat to that is you need to know what you're talking about. And I am just your run-of-the-mill dummy, I guess. I'm not a Marxist. I'm not, I don't, there's so much of this stuff. I didn't really even know the whole history of, I had a general understanding of what Trotskyism is and, the atrocities of Stalin, but I really like went in before rehearsal started. I kind of just did my own, as much as I could, the deep dive of looking at documentaries, looking up every article that I could just to familiarize myself with everything. And at a certain point, I went through the script, and because so many people are referenced, so many political figures and so many authors are referenced. I mean, in the second scene, he is a professor of modernist literature. And I wish I could say that I was an intellectual or that I was versed in modernist literature. So I was like, I guess I better read some modernist literature. So I went to the Brooklyn Library. I got myself Mann, Rilke, Kafka, Nietzsche, and very quickly learned that, Jeff, you know, you start rehearsals in 2 weeks. What do you think you're going to accomplish? So while I'm still looking at the books right now that I've renewed twice, like, just this pile, and while I haven't, like, I had to give up very quickly at like drinking in adequately what you would like to, you know, hey, we would all love to have the luxury of Daniel Day-Lewis and say, I'm going to take 2 years and read everything that there is to know about. But I would, on the subway, on my way to work or on my way to rehearsals, try and at least give myself a passing, if not familiarity, then somewhat immersion in the words and see, okay, what is it about Lev that gets Lev so excited about this? What gets him so excited about it? And the more I did that, then it kind of led off into this way where it's like, oh, I don't have to worry so much about that. While I'm enjoying reading new things and reading new literature, I also don't have to, I'm going to get so weirdly actory here, but like, I don't have to worry about becoming an expert on modernist literature because he gets so excited about these things. And then I just thought, oh, well, there are things that I get excited about. I get nerdy about theater. I get nerdy about actors of the 30s. I get nerdy about the history of the group theater. I get nerdy about cinema history. And so I'm like, that's Lev. That's just Lev. So all I'm doing is I'm just like, so it in this weird way that if I was to go into it, it would just turn into like babbling mush. There was an overlap there where I was able to kind of explore some new, it's my favorite thing about the homework of doing plays anyway, is I get to explore things that I'm not as familiar with anyway. So I'm reading more Kafka and more T.S. Eliot than I ever have in my life. But at the same time, there's not that need of, oh, I better do this, otherwise I'm not doing it. No, I mean, it is acting and stuff, but it's, no, Lev is a geek for this stuff. He gets excited. He's so passionate about this. And I've got those things that I'm passionate about too. So you just let those feed into the play. So and in a weird way that, again, if I were to describe it, it would just sound weird and masturbatory, but it works. And
yeah.
And then when you get in the room, you get to enjoy that experience with everybody else and to see everybody else playing and to get in the play box, the sandbox with all of the other kids and just bring your gifts and see what gifts they've brought, what toys they have brought to the sandbox. And it's just, that's when it really gets exciting.
And it's been so great to work with Jeff. I mean, Jeff, I'll toot your horn for a little bit because I see you won't do it yourself. But Jeff is an actor who is just working at an incredibly high level of precision and focus and intensity. And, you know, yes, it's not necessary for an actor to know everything that the character knows about every topic in the world. But Jeff has been very careful about being like, you know, this particular line, I don't quite get what he's saying here. Like, can you explain this to me? And it's been great to see, like, you know, that Jeff will make these little adjustments once we have that conversation that, you know, maybe nine out of 10 audience members wouldn't even notice, but it just snaps it into focus in a way that is so beautiful when he knows exactly what the sort of tactic is of that line, you know, not just understanding the reference, but, you know, what is he doing by employing that reference in this moment? You know, there are times when he's trying to connect with people. There are times when he's trying to kind of browbeat people. There are times when he's just trying to overwhelm people with his erudition in this incredibly annoying way. But those are all different, you know? And so it's been great to kind of go through it and you know, our dramaturg and assistant director counted 112 references in the play, and I think he undercounted a little bit. But it's been great going through all of those and just saying, you know, why is he saying this in that moment? You know, what is he trying to do here? And really kind of nerding out about the kind of, you know, just the basic, what's your intention? What's your objective? What tactics are you employing here? Like that basic stuff has been great.
Well, Lev is also fascinating in that way. And so maybe I'm jumping ahead here. Yeah, but like Lev is fascinating, that character, because this isn't something, at least I don't, maybe I do it unconsciously. I don't think I do, but like because I don't think I get off on arguing as much or fighting. But again, talk to somebody else, though. We can't be objective about ourselves. Something that Lev does is, yeah, he these things that he gets excited about, he also uses them as ammunition. He's got this toolbox of things that he can pull out just like that. One of the characters says to him, can't you, what does Lou say to him? What is the line? He says,
can't you get through a single sentence without a footnote or something?
It's like, he's nothing but footnotes. He's got nothing but footnotes in his head. And they're used as both, like, just to please himself. Like, sometimes he'll just use it for a little snack for himself. Like, he'll just pull out, oh, that's a tasty little cheese and Triscuits right there. I like that. Or he will bring it out as a weapon, and use it to use against somebody in an argument. And he's very deft at it. He knows that he's good at it, and he's almost too good at it as the play goes on to show. And he's in some ways he's become too good at it in that he's stopped. And again, I apologize if I'm getting ahead of it, but he's so good at that aspect of it that he has not practiced the equally important, if not more important, aspect of discourse, of listening, of actually receiving. And that's really what actually the thing that brought me into this play, which was like, this is a play that I need to be a part of. I want to be a part of this because that's the part of the play that is so, people say often like, oh, well, did you do this with current things in mind so much with Trump and MAGA and the fighting that's going on right now? And while you may not have, I don't know, like if that was the first thing in your head, that's what drew me into it, because it's not even like, well, this is for, it's because we are so, even with people who I passionately agree with, I've caught myself just being like, I'm not listening. I'm just agreeing loudly, or I'm Lev is somebody who's, he doesn't want discourse. He wants to annihilate his opponent. Mm-hmm. That's a frightening thing that we're seeing a lot of today. And it's, I don't have an answer of how that's going to end, but I'm not optimistic about that battle plan being an ultimately positive one.
Yeah.
So that's really what drew me to this play in the first place.
I think one of the things that the play shows is that, like, that basic posture of intellectual debate or political debate or even literary debate as combat has no ideology. I mean, that exists across the political spectrum. You know, that and Lev can, that's one of the reasons why Lev is the same character throughout the play. We see him over 40 years, over three scenes, but he's still the same guy because he's still a scrapper. You know, he's still somebody who's trying to destroy the person across from him rather than listening and learning from the person across from him.
That is wonderful. I love that. I love the depth we're getting into with this conversation, especially where we've just left off, because I want to snowball off of it and ask you, Andy, what exactly is a message or thought that you hope audiences take away from the show? We've been throwing out some really great ideas, but is there a particular one you hope that your audiences are leaving with?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things people can draw from the play. And mostly I want it to lead people to continue to discuss and engage with the play afterwards. And, you know, when people say, I remember the best compliment I ever got was a professor of mine, Charles Mee, saw one of my plays in grad school. And I saw him later that week and he said, I loved your play. I was discussing it with my wife for days, you know? And that's a great feeling when you feel like you haven't just, you know, provided someone with a fun time that they sort of forget as soon as they leave the theater, but that it really sticks with them and that they kind of keep rolling it over in their brain. So that's certainly what I'm hoping for. But in terms of a message, I mean, I guess it's that politics is not a game. You know, well, that's one of the things that one of the other characters says to Lev is that, you know, you continue to entertain the illusion that politics is a game. And it's not. And I think that it's important to keep in mind the humanity of each side of every political conflict. And that doesn't mean giving up on the idea that you think, that doesn't mean giving up on your values. That doesn't mean saying, you know, everybody's point of view is equally valid. But I think there is a way to engage with people that you disagree with, and even people that are, you know, that mean to do you harm, in a way that is open and loving and accepting of the idea that there is a human on the other side of this thing. You know, and sometimes that question becomes, how did a human come to act so inhumanely, you know? But I think, and this is alluded to a little bit at the end of the play, but I think it's very important that nobody's ever too far gone. You know, nobody's ever past redemption. You know, there's a line in a song by Bill Callahan, one of my favorite singers, where he says, "No matter how far wrong you've gone, you can always turn around." And I think that's something that you have to remember when you're engaging with any, you know, contentious political issue, is there is a chance you could convince the other side, you know, but you're not going to do it by calling them an idiot, you know. You're not going to do it by berating them. And it can be hard to do. It can be infuriating to try to be patient with people who just want to
Especially.
engage with you in an argumentative way. But I don't see, you know, like Jeff was saying, I don't see a good things for our culture if we don't get better at doing that.
Well, especially when it's become the precedent, I think. Like to instead of and I wouldn't I'm again, I don't pay enough attention, or at least I didn't until the last whenever. But it's become such a precedent of no, we just need to be louder than what I agree with. And again, I don't have an alternative because, again, it's not going to help. Like you said, it's not going to help just to sit and say, well, everyone's view is valid. It's like, no, there are some pretty, and it's not going to help just to sit down and be apathetic about it. I think that's another good thing that the play does is you bring a very specific point of view and some good questions, but you don't necessarily give any easy answers. I mean, there may be answers there, but I haven't found them, only because also I'm approaching it not as a I'm trying to approach it like specifically from Lev's point of view, and Lev is right. I'm right. It's like, and everyone else can't see it. I need to help them. I need to make them see it. It's
But I think that's really one of the things that, I mean, I think this is sort of theater superpower that, like, for this play to work, you have to have empathy for Lev. Like, if you were standing outside of Lev as an actor, judging him the whole time, it would be dead. It would be nothing interesting about that. And that's the same as, and you know, Jake, our director, has to do the same thing, and I, as the playwright, have to do the same thing. You have to have empathy for everybody on stage, or it just doesn't work. It's just not interesting, you know. And I think that in that way, theater really can be a sort of, you know, I don't want to get too woo-woo about this, but can be a sort of spiritual practice. It can be a way of practicing, you know, seeing the world from somebody else's point of view. And sometimes you go see a play and, you know, you are introduced to a character who's not like anybody else you've ever met in your real life, and they completely open your eyes to a new way of thinking about things. And I think that can be very healthy to expose yourself to that.
wonderful ideas, absolutely wonderful ideas that I think we can all set our watch to. Well, my final question for this first part, I'm going to pass to you, Jeff, and that, of course, is who do you hope have access to this play?
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I want to say anyone who wants to come to the standard dumb answer is like, well, anyone who wants to have a great night of theater, that's true. But anyone who's interested in, I guess, keeping an open mind and recognizing themselves in someone else. The more I approach the play, just as an actor, I find little things in Lev or in other characters where I say, oh, I didn't see that before, but that's me. That's me. And not even necessarily all negative things, some good things, but all, like, they're a recognizable thing. These are people whose lives are so vastly different from mine. That's what's interesting to me. But there are also those parallels that I wouldn't necessarily have found or assumed that I would find by approaching the story of a Trotskyist going to City College, or a man whose entire career is devoted to modernist literature. So again, I guess now that's I haven't answered the question. I would say I hope anyone comes to the play, but I hope whoever does come to the play walks away with a lot of thoughts.
Second part of our interview, we love letting our listeners get to know our guests a little bit more. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I know that we're very short on time, but I couldn't let the two of you go without asking our favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory? Or Andy, since this is the episode 3 with you, what's another of your favorite theater memories?
When I was in high school, I went to a program called the National High School Institute at Northwestern University, which is like a little, like a theater camp that's, I don't know, 6 weeks or something. It's like most of the summer. And it's kind of where I figured out that I wanted to be a playwright, partially by taking writing classes that were great and partially by seeing acting students and realizing that they were already at 16 more talented than I would ever be. So my fate was sort of sealed then. And there was a moment where we saw a show where it was like a very kind of Brechtian absurd clown show. And at one point, one of the performers held up their thumb and their forefinger like this and said, throughout this show, we've been pretending that this is a gun. This is not a gun. And then they extended their middle finger so that now they had two fingers as the barrel of the gun. And they said, this is a gun. And I just love that moment of breaking the artifice of theater and then remaking it the next moment. And that's never really left me, that idea of, you know, that on stage, anything can be anything you want it to be. And the audience will really go along with you. I mean, they'll believe that this one actor is playing a character at three different ages over the course of 40 years. And that sort of acceptance of the willingness to suspend disbelief is sort of the magic trick of theater.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Jeff, how about you?
There are too many. I've got to pick just one. No, honestly, I could pick so many. I mean, as a self-proclaimed geek, I am a nerd. I love doing this and seeing it and it, like theaters. So I have so many moments, but I mean, okay, I'll pick two. there are too many. I guess watching certain performances or productions and being able to see what's possible with either just theater as a whole or acting, that's what stands out to me. For the longest time before I came to New York, I didn't see as much theater. All I saw was like film and cinema, and there's so much wonderful things there, but you have no frame of reference for the real magic that is out there if you don't see more theater. I remember seeing, I got the opportunity to see Cecily Tyson perform in A Trip to Bountiful. And I remember seeing her in when I was a kid, I saw her in school in the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. But I remember seeing a performance on stage where, I mean, everyone in the play was wonderful, everyone, but I was just watching her and I think she was 80 years old. This was 10 years ago. She was 80 years old. And I'm like, how is she doing this? There was a sort of, like, people have described Brando on stage as just being like, he was just there. There was nothing tense. There was nothing, he was just existing on the stage. I've never seen him on the stage. He's wonderful in movies, but that was Cecily Tyson on the stage. She was just, it was like, she was a feather in the wind, just being moved by whatever. And she was just there. Like, it was the most, some of the most pure acting that I've ever seen. And it's, I often remember her and think like, I don't know that that can be learned, but I'd like to keep trying to get to, like, that's the wonderful thing about watching things like that. You can either like tell yourself, oh, well, that's just genius. And yes, that's probably true. I don't think I will ever, ever get to see ever get to the kind of artistry that I saw her perform that night, but I can keep striving towards that kind of freedom, that kind of like just complete. I mean, she, I guess the ouched to every pinch, I guess, or I guess the phrase is she, I'm just babbling right now. It was so pure, her performance. And it was something that I constantly think back to again and again and again. One more that I'm going to say, and then I'm going to shut up. I got to see Red back in 2010. And incidentally, it was the night of the bomb scare. Thankfully, it didn't go off. It was the one in 2010, May, I think it was, in Times Square. There was a bomb that was defused. And he was not on stage. Apparently, he was supposed to start the play with the audience all coming in, him just sitting in the chair as Rothko, smoking and musing and looking at his painting. Well, he comes out and there's Alfred Molina just coming. He just waves to us and he explains to us what's going on outside. And he says, you know, we'll hopefully get started. And it's just, you know, I'm an actor. I'm out here. How's it going? We're fine. I want you to let you know what's happening. And then he goes back. He tells a few jokes, and we all laugh. And he goes back. And then he comes back on, and he's like, "All right, it looks like everything's settled. Everyone's safe. We're gonna get started. And then he actually goes on. He's like, "See, what normally happens is I would have been sitting here smoking the whole time, and you would have seen Mark Rothko, and you would have thought, what an interesting artistic choice. But I'm just going to go ahead and sit down, and we'll just pretend I've been sitting the whole time." And we're all just, it's so delightful, so funny. He sits down, the lights change. And again, I kid you not, another person stood up from the chair, like in seconds. Mark Rothko stood up from the chair in every, and I was just like, it was a magic trick. Again, like Cecily Tyson, it was like, how did they do that? How did they? And I love those moments in the theater. I love watching them and like thinking, I don't think you can ever, like, as much as I've tried, I don't think you can plan on creating that. Maybe it can happen, but it just has to happen by chance. But you can keep trying to get to that point. It was like, maybe I can be a part of that kind of magic at some point by happenstance. Again, I don't think, like, because I don't think either Cecily Tyson or Alfred Molina at those moments were thinking, I'm going to show you a little magic trick. Didn't matter. They were just doing what they did. And for me, the audience member, I was like, it was just a moment of illumination that, like, when it happens to whatever extent, I always love it. And whenever it happens in the theater, I'm just, I don't know, I'm tickled each time.
Anyway. So wonderful. I love that as well. Two fantastic memories from the both of you. Thank you for those. As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Nothing I can announce yet, but if people want to learn more about my work, they can go to my website, andyjboyd.com, or they can follow me on Instagram at andyjboyd, where I post cartoons. And then in my stories, I post stuff about different theater that I'm doing.
Love it. Yes. Love following you on Instagram. It's fantastic. Well, my final question for the two of you is, if our listeners would like more information about Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist or about either of you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so? Andy, I know you've already listed your website and your Instagram handle, but is there any other contact info you'd like to share?
Go to thetanknyc.org, and that's where you can get tickets. And yeah, that's the place to go.
Jeff, anything for you?
You can always reach me at my Instagram handle. It's J Allen Gonzalez. That's JALANGONZALEZ. Yeah, that's my social media. It's on Instagram. So you can reach out there and you can try jeffgonzalez.com. I hope maybe that will inspire me to get my website actually in a presentable place in the next near future.
Wonderful. Well, Andy, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and sharing this wonderful show. I'm so excited to see it. It sounds fantastic. So I appreciate you both taking the time to speak with me about it today.
Thank you, Andrew.
Absolutely. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My guests today have been the amazing playwright returning to us, Andy Boyd, and the actor, Jeff Gonzalez, both who are part of the show Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist. It's playing right now through March 17th at The Tank, and you can get your tickets and more information at thetanknyc.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you get your tickets now. Come out and join us to this wonderful new work, Three Scenes in the Life of a Trotskyist, playing now through March 17th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.